If you're like not an atheist and you're like, I want to go on to Geeks Without God and tell them what fucking idiots they are for not believing in God, that's cool.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we have guest Patrick Ryan Bauer, who is a huge fan of Quentin Tarantino films. So we spent a lot of time talking about Quentin Tarantino films. Motherfucker.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. We are live at Die Laughing. And we are going to be recording a live podcast with our guest, Twin Cities comedian Patrick Bauer.
Hello.
Yeah. Now, and of course, we are joined by, I'm your host, Tim Wick. I forgot that part at the beginning. It's live. I'm totally freaking out right now. So I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined by my co-host, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Nick Glover.
That's me.
And our guest, Patrick Bauer.
Bauer.
Well, I know. I can't pronounce
it. Tim is so drunk, you guys.
I am. I'm really fucking drunk right now. So we brought Pat on. You are, one thing we want to talk about, you are nominated by the City Pages to be the best comedian in the Twin Cities. Is that right?
Apparently, yes.
Yes.
You're up against Maria Bamford and...
there was someone else. Not Mary Mack.
Yep, Mary Mack.
Mary Mack.
Andy Erickson and my buddy Chris Maddock. And of all the people nominated, Chris and I are the only people that actually live in town.
So that means your chances are pretty much zero, wouldn't you say?
With Bamford on there, yes. Yeah. I mean, everyone on there is very funny. I mean, it was going to be tough competition.
That old ass pug of hers is cheating. That's performance enhancing.
Performance enhancing pugs.
Yeah. So,
Jesus.
So congratulations for that. But what we brought you on the podcast, we were talking about what sort of geeky things you might want to talk about. And the thing that he said he wanted to talk about was Quentin Tarantino. So Tarantino films or Tarantino the guy?
I'm not too familiar with his personal life, to tell the truth.
Okay.
He's kind of an asshole. I mean, he's a brilliant asshole. He's a brilliant movie dick.
He's a brilliant
really?
Movie dick.
See, I don't ever hear that. I always just see him being really funny on talk shows and... He's a loudmouth dork.
He's got really strong opinions, and he's very passionate about things, which is admirable. But like the other side of that coin is like you're kind of a dick to people who aren't just passionate sometimes.
I
can't relate to that.
See, I was gonna say I should qualify, because when I say he's kind of an asshole, that's kind of a compliment.
Yeah,
I mean he is who he is, which is, I mean, I'm kind of an asshole. I'm not even kind of, I'm an asshole.
Yeah. See, I'm not surprised though, because that means you have an edge to you.
Right, exactly.
And I think that puts you ahead of other creative people when you have an edge. Not always, I guess. I shouldn't say that if you lack an edge that you can't be like funny or talented or anything like that, but I've kind of always appreciated someone that's just got that bite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the first Tarantino movie you saw?
You know, what's weird, I figured that would come up, and I couldn't remember, to tell the truth, but I think I saw Reservoir Dogs first, like at a friend's house, and not necessarily got to sit down and watch it properly.
Right.
But then I had another buddy that was like, Patrick, you got to see this movie that's out. It's called Pulp Fiction. You got to come with me and see it. And I remember watching it, and I don't know if you ever get movie funk. Like if you sit in a theater and watch a movie, and then when you get out, you have a little trouble adjusting to being back into real life.
Oh, yeah.
That was the worst I've ever had.
Really?
I could not get back into real life. I was like, well, movies are too cool now. I don't want to live anymore. I mean,
so when you talk about loving Tarantino, is it just the Tarantino movies? Is it Tarantino movies that he's written but not directed? You know, is there a limit? What I want to know is, are there limits to your Tarantino love?
There's always limits to everything that I love, for sure. Although I think True Romance is a fine film. Mm. And recently got to watch the fan cut that someone put together.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, because when he wrote it, it was nonlinear. Mm. And Tony Scott actually filmed it that way.
Hang on.
Oh.
Tarantino wrote something that was nonlinear?
I know.
Hey, what
it's
the fuck?
Crazy.
Yeah.
It had fuck in it, too, so that's bizarre.
Yeah.
Breaking lots of Tarantino tropes.
And there was
tropes.
A tough girl.
Yeah.
She was a girl, but tough like a man.
and wore, right, so wore anyway, a man's deodorant.
So anyway, back to True Romance and Tony Scott.
Yes, well, Tony Scott filmed it according to the original script, including the original ending. And then at some point in time, and I couldn't tell you why, I'm not an industry insider, but apparently decided to change it around, make it linear, and change the ending so that it was like a happy ending. And so I got to watch this fan cut, and it was actually really cool, and it actually made sense. And whoever did this is not a bad editor. Maybe not needing a job in Hollywood right away, but for a guy, you know, for a labor of love, this guy just, you know, did this. It was a really fun watch, especially for a movie that maybe I've seen a bunch of times. To see it in a whole new light was really cool. And Clarence dies at the end, by the way. He fucking dies.
Holy shit. Spoilers. Okay. So, what is it about Tarantino that you love? Why do you think Tarantino is the most fucking awesome filmmaker ever?
It's,
if that's what you think, I don't even know.
Again, you know, these things are difficult to describe. He's certainly my favorite current director, and I don't even know if I'd say he's the best director out there. He's just my favorite. You know, I try to be objective about these things, and he just speaks this language to me that I understand, and it's all violence and dark humor and being a geek. And what's weird is that I don't see his stuff resonating a whole lot in the geek community always.
Really?
Not always.
Okay.
I find that to be very sad because I think he is the geekiest director out there.
He's obsessive about details.
Yeah, but he's wrong, and I want to talk about how he's wrong for a minute. Okay, end of Kill Bill. Okay, end of Kill Bill. Bill is having this conversation with Beatrix.
Oh, the Superman thing.
Yeah, and he's talking about how Bruce Wayne is Bruce Wayne and how... He's like Bruce Wayne plays at Batman, but he's really Bruce Wayne. And then he goes on to say, but Superman is always Superman, and Clark Kent is not really Superman. Clark Kent is Superman's critique of the human race. And here's the problem: Bruce Wayne is fucking Batman. There is no fucking Bruce Wayne.
You heard it here first.
Bruce Wayne died when his parents got shot.
So what the fuck is wrong with Quentin Tarantino? Yeah.
Okay, I want to ask you this. Do you think that he speaks through each and every one of his characters?
I think he does in this particular case. I'm going to argue that he does.
So he's a murderer, Quentin Tarantino.
Yes.
But no, hold on.
He's killed people that I love.
No, I think he's a murderer in the sense that, like, that's the part of him that if it was going to murder somebody, like, assuming he didn't have moral or ethical qualms. I mean, you can't say to me that you haven't thought about murdering a person. Like, thought about it and thought about what it might feel like or
anything. I'm thinking about it right now.
Exactly, yeah. I get that a lot. And, I think that I do think that he speaks through all his characters. Do not?
Not always, because actually, and this is the thing, I wish I could have brushed up on all of this. I actually read that deal that Bill says about Superman is actually taken from a book or a monologue of something. I can't remember what it was, but funny this, he took someone else's idea and put it in a movie.
I know, it's crazy. Shia LaBeouf
read it?
I think it's, it might have been All-Star Superman. I think that idea was
I have literally no way of knowing.
Grant Morrison, All-Star Superman, I think.
Well, I read that. I don't... No, this was taken from someone actually just kind of taking an outsider's look at superheroes. Okay.
But I think here's the point. I think, do you think that Quentin Tarantino, when he was writing that, knew that he was wrong? And that Bill was wrong. That's what I wanted to do. Was he like writing this going, this Bill, he's such a fucking idiot. He doesn't understand that Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Hold on.
I think if Bill weren't wrong, he wouldn't have been killed by the protagonist.
So just so you know, when I try to Google Tarantino Kill Bill Superman speech, the third hit is Kill Bill Superman speech wrong.
See? You see, everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. So... Neither can I. It's a constant surprise to me. So, what is your favorite Tarantino film?
Kill Bill.
Kill Bill. Both of them? Or, one or two or together?
Well, if I had to pick between the two of them, I'd say one. And it's just so much fun to me. I wouldn't even call it his best film. It's just, it was so much fun to me. And I remember, like I said, because of the Pulp Fiction thing, it blew me away. I was like, oh my God, I didn't know movies could be like that. That's so cool. And this is before I'd seen a bunch of cool 70s movies, obviously. And then, Jackie Brown came out, and I was like, wow, that was a really cool follow-up and everything. And then when Kill Bill came out, I was ready to be really disappointed. Because I, you know, I'd seen kung fu flicks, and I was like, "Oh shit! I know how this is supposed to go down. There's no way that this dude is going to make a movie as cool as some of these other kung fu flicks that I've seen." And then it was the fucking coolest. And I saw it four times in the theater. And then I downloaded it, and then I bought it midnight the night it came out, and I loved it so much, and I slept with it.
Do you? Okay. So you had it. So you had a lot of familiarity with kung fu movies before you saw Kill Bill.
I wouldn't say a lot of familiarity.
Okay, more than the average bear, would you say that?
Than the average person? Yes.
No, average. The average bear. The average walking bear. You fucking idiot. All right. Christ on a cross. All right, no. So, because when I went and saw it, the thing that happened, just
autism. Just that's all I'm gonna
say
is
autism.
Okay,
so that also yes, autism, and I was like, I don't like it, but like at the same time, I didn't.
God,
but
I wish somebody was taking a picture of it right then.
It confused me. Well, loud noises confuse me, but also
actually play that sound when I want sex, just to like get her into a mental state.
Seriously, what's happening? Where am I?
Shut up and put this in your mouth, like you know.
I didn't realize it was like a staple of kung fu films to have that weird, like a focus on the eyes and like da da.
The really extreme zooms in and out
and all that. So to me, I felt like that was just fucking terrible. When I saw, the first time I saw Kill Bill, I hated it.
It's a stylistic choice.
I loved it afterward, but I hated it the first time I saw it. And I wondered if it's because I didn't know enough about kung fu movies.
Gosh, you know, I don't even know if I'd go so far as to say that's like a typical kung fu thing. And it's hard to say because the copies of kung fu flicks that you get here are often radically changed from their original inception. Because they get overdubbed. Sometimes they'll put new music in
it. The plot will be totally different.
Right. Like, okay, so in Kill Bill 2, they're watching Shogun Assassin, right?
Yeah.
Which is, we all know from the beginning of Liquid Swords, right?
Yeah.
Just me? Okay.
I was going to say the most boring fucking movie ever.
And that's the thing, is what most people, is Shogun Assassin, but no. Shogun Assassin is actually Lone Wolf and Cub, the first two movies chopped into one movie and dubbed over and with a bunch of other shit put in it. Okay. So it's weird.
Lone Wolf and Cub is... Super. It's like The Road. It's but like a
with
samurai.
A lot of breastfeeding.
It's
so much breastfeeding.
It's
in Lone
Wolf
and Cub.
Super slow and long stretches of traveling on the road, and then brutal violence, and then more boringness.
Yeah, it's like super dull, and then people die and then it's dull again. No, I.
Oh, you're only entertained when someone's dying, huh?
Yes.
He's an atheist. Right.
That's fair.
I want to know what your. Was there any Tarantino movie you ever saw where you didn't like it right away?
I would say that Django is probably the one that left the least awesome impression on me after the first viewing.
Oh,
the least awesome impression. That's
sure. No, I understand that. No, because I love Stephen King. There's a lot of books I hate, but there's some.
That's like Praise by Faint Damnation.
Yeah. Damned by faint praise.
I meant the opposite. I meant what I said.
But has it grown on you as subsequent viewings?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to go back to Kill Bill because you say that's your favorite. And actually, I would when somebody asks me what my favorite Tarantino film is, I say Kill Bill 2 because I think it's
a lot of fun. Kill Bill or Kill Bill 2?
Or Kill Bill.
Kill Bill also, or Kill Bill 2?
Kill Bill.
Or as
Kill
well.
Bill. It's a serious question.
You have
question.
Many options here.
Kill Bill as well.
All right.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Who's okay. Bill as well?
So.
Bill as well.
Because I think Kill Bill is just a blast. It's a fun movie to watch. Now I don't think it's the best Tarantino film. And what is? Where are you at? Is it the best Tarantino film to you, or the most fun, or both?
I just think it's the most fun, personally.
Okay.
Sometimes it's like, you know, oh, that's a good movie. Like, it's not fun. It's not a good time. It might even be like a chore to watch, but I appreciate it as like art, you know.
Like your voice.
So it's like watching. It's like watching Robert Altman
like
films.
Fucking Dancer in the Dark. Like, I never want to see that movie ever again. But it was good. I don't feel like slitting my wrist tomorrow, so I'm not going to watch the movie again. But
you keep a copy around
just in case. Just in case, right? Just in case you need that push.
After we have one of those fights, he's like, right, "You should watch this."
I'm gonna watch it. But then there's he's saying it's the most fun Tarantino movie ever, which I think you're specifically making the differentiation between like a good film and like a fun time.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's what I was trying to say, that I try to be objective about it and try and look at it and try and say, well, what is his best movie, actually? And that's a lot harder, because I can easily say that Kill Bill is my favorite, because I don't have to argue about it at that point.
Justify what your favorite is.
Yeah, I'm just like, yeah, it just, you know, it spoke to me. It was great. It's Uma Thurman running around cutting people up with a blade. What the fuck don't you
like
about
that? That speaks to you on a personal
level. I don't know why you would not like that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if I had to say what his best film was, well, then I guess it's kind of a three-way tie between...
Ooh, it's a three-way.
I know, right? Yeah. He's only made, what, five? but I'd say Inglourious Basterds makes a strong argument for it just being an amazing, just well-put-together movie. Pulp Fiction, obviously, that's just, like I said, it blew my mind, and And it's one of those things where I fall victim to that sort of thing where something gets really popular that I kind of want to distance myself from it because I don't want to be a bandwagon sort of guy. But every time I pop Pulp Fiction in and watch it, I'm like, God damn, this is...
It always holds up.
My mom calls it a stop and watch because anytime she is flipping through channels and it's on TV, she's done. That's what she's watching. Like, that's her favorite. So
yeah, that makes sense.
And this this explains a lot, too, if anyone sticks around and watches my stand-up set later. What I like about Pulp Fiction, it's the only comedy that you have to watch a second time before you start laughing.
Oh, yeah. Sure, sure.
I don't know. I laughed when the kid got shot in the face the first time.
Oh, my God.
Hilarious.
It's hilarious.
Hold on.
But you start laughing, and you're like, fuck.
Wait. So I went and saw that movie. I was on a date. I was in high school, and I was on a date with a guy that I'd known since we were seven. And he asked me out. We went on this movie, and that part happened. And I have an inappropriate laugh response when things are horrible or really, really awesome. And so I'm like, ha, 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 like just laughing way too hard. This guy was revulsed by me. He just looked at me, and he was like, a man was killed. Like, he whispered that to me.
No.
And like, and no, completely oblivious. I go, I know, right? that was probably.
And that's why she only blew him.
And
that's,
I was gonna say that was my only date that didn't end in a blowjob.
So wow, we learned a lot. Right there.
I mean, it's really unsurprising if you.
If you're a listener, you should not be surprised.
A similar thing happened when I went to see Revenge of the Sith. That was the only way to get tickets to Revenge of the Sith on opening night, by the way.
Yeah.
But no, it was a big theater full of people, and we're watching Revenge of the Sith, you know, and we're all just kind of in that same place where we're like, well, we did the first two, so. There we go.
When
Anakin comes in, lines up the Padawans. I started laughing my ass off, and I just, you could feel the wind rush to the back of the theater from all the heads turning to look at me.
So I, my brother was a little kid, he was like that, like, preteen target market age for Titanic when that came out. So he wanted to go see Titanic, and my dad and I went and saw him. My dad's kind of an asshole. And so
weird.
So we sat directly behind my brother because he didn't want to be associated with us. I don't know why. But so there's that scene when the boat is like totally perpendicular to the water, and it's finally going in, and people are at the top holding on. No, I don't want to fall. And some dude falls over the edge and hits the propeller. And my dad leans over to me and goes, don't worry, it's just a prop. And we were laughing so hard that we got escorted out of the theater.
Like, no way.
But my, cause
so
the,
you didn't like, know how it ended. Oh, my God.
Right, it was a total surprise. I had no idea that he was a
lizard. All the
person.
Poor people drown. That's how it ends.
The ending of that is all I have seen. And it almost made me want to watch the rest of it because obviously there's a bunch of people dying, you know, a bunch of assholes falling in the water. And then
they're
Kathy
called
Bates,
Irish.
Who I enjoy.
No. Irish were way drowned.
Fuck the Irish.
The Unsinkable Molly Brown. That's cool.
Yeah.
And then, she, you know, Kathy Bates plays her in Titanic. And then there's this frozen baby just sort of bobbing in the water.
Yeah.
his mom's waving blue.
His mom's holding the baby, and she's also frozen. Look, okay.
I want to
explain why I know this. You see, my son, my darling, my 9-year-old son Devin, has been obsessed with the Titanic since he was four. He has every book written about the Titanic that he can find, and he has watched Titanic at least 50 times. Titanic,
I've seen amazing magnets. Drawings at your house of him drawing like the Titanic with all the blood.
And he and he doesn't care a good goddamn about Rose and Jack. He just wants to watch the boat sink over and over and over again. So this is why I know the baby was being held in his mother's arms and they were both frozen.
Because that part on your VHS is just like worn out really bad from him, like rewind.
I don't offer to babysit very often.
Say no, Tim.
But
say
I think
no.
This sounds like a good match.
Yeah, he probably liked Pulp Fiction. So back to Pulp Fiction.
Right.
If we could. So, you know, and you said that's two of the three that you think are his best. You know, to me, Pulp Fiction is super, it's like one of the most important films of our lives.
I agree with that.
It resurrected John Travolta's career.
It changed the game.
It changed movies.
Yeah, for sure.
If you go watch American Hustle, you know, whether you like it or not, that movie does not exist without Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. I agree with that.
The way that movie is written, the way those characters talk, and the way the story is told is totally what Tarantino did to movies.
Yeah, well, but like, what did he do there that he didn't accomplish more or less with Reservoir Dogs?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Reservoir Dogs was not the smash hit that Pulp Fiction was.
But like, as far as like that style of storytelling, that kind of comedy, that kind of incredible violence, I mean, all the elements of Pulp Fiction are in Reservoir Dogs.
Well, sure, but they aren't perfected yet.
They're not perfected. No, it's like Bottle Rocket versus Rushmore.
I was just gonna say, it's exactly that.
I fucking love Bottle Rocket.
I fucking love Reservoir Dogs, but it's half an hour too long.
Much love, man.
And I love Reservoir Dogs. Like, that's my favorite Tarantino movie.
All right. I need to know where you stand on Four Rooms, though, like, for real. Like, I really want to know.
I'll get to that in a second.
Okay, good. No, because I actually, I will tell you right now, I like Four Rooms.
But one of the most important things, I just want to say before we get to Four Rooms, one of the most important things that Pulp Fiction did was put the power back into the hands of directors.
Mm. Sure.
People with artistic vision.
Auteurs.
Because
the auteur.
Writer-director.
The Deer Hunter happened, and everyone was like, oh my God, the Deer Hunter. Oh my, holy shit. And then, so that guy got to do whatever the fuck he wanted for his next movie.
Once.
Once. And it was a terrible flop.
That was
and
Heaven's Gate, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And after that, they were like, no, by committee, Hollywood.
Yeah. And the thing is, Heaven's Gate is not, it's not a great film, but it's not awful. The problem was it was disaster. He spent a shit ton of money, and nobody went to see it.
Well, and it almost happened again because of Grindhouse, because the Weinsteins were like, you guys get to do whatever the fuck you want with this. And we'll finance it. And then no one went to go see Grindhouse because everybody is stupid and Grindhouse is beautiful.
It was all right.
You know, the more I watch it, the more I see of it. I missed it in the theater, the two movies. I didn't do that. The more I see of
Death Proof.
Death Proof. That one is the better movie. And I love that one more and more every time I watch it. And the other one I like less and less every time
I
watch it.
Well, Tarantino is the better director. I mean, that's just the way it is.
But are you watching the extended cuts?
No.
Okay, you got to see like the way it was presented in the theaters.
Okay.
Because that's what broke my heart because of what a flop it was, they released the extended cuts separately in order to kind of recoup their losses.
Yeah.
And the extended cuts are not that fun to watch. Unless you were like a big fan of the theatrical version, the extended cuts are just sort of this like, and here's more of that.
Yeah, I mean, they were made to be basically 1 hour films.
And right.
It's like, if I can blaspheme for a moment, it's like the extended cuts of The Lord of the Rings, in that those movies were made to be 3 hours long. And the extended cuts have a whole lot of extra scenes that if you're a total Lord of the Rings nerd, you'll love them. And I am a total Lord of the Rings nerd and I love them. But when I sit there and I watch the two films, objectively the theatrical release is better because it's tighter and because most of the stuff that they add is not necessary. You get the extra stuff without needing to have them say it.
I want to add to that. Like the thing I'm most looking forward to from the Hobbit films... plural, is as much as I love all the like Silmarillion stuff in there, I'm looking forward to a fan edit that is just The Hobbit. where they take the parts that are the book and they put them together into one like 3-hour movie that's just The Hobbit with none of the Silmarillion stuff, none of the stuff that makes it just a Lord of the Rings prequel, and just makes The Hobbit, because all the stuff is there, most of it, and it's great, and I just, they're just too long.
Yeah, and you know, I've enjoyed what I've seen of the Lord of the Rings and Hobbit stuff, and it's so weird because I was a big Peter Jackson fan before he was doing that, and I enjoy it, and I was actually really impressed. I was like, wow, I can't believe this guy knows how to make a big budget motion picture.
Well, bad taste. I mean, fuck, man.
Derek Stone Run.
Meet the Feebles? Was that him too?
Yeah, Meet the Feebles. Jesus Christ. I fucking love Meet the Feebles so much. Interesting. I heard that. I don't. You know, this is a weird thing I hear. I have no idea if it's true, but apparently the guy that actually greenlighted Peter Jackson for the Lord of the Rings trilogy wasn't aware of some of his earlier stuff, and he was basing it on Heavenly Creatures, and then went to go meet him in Peter Jackson's office, and then saw the posters for Bad Taste and Dead Alive. Or Brain Dead.
Dead Alive, right? Yeah.
And just kind of thought to himself, like, "Fuck. Well, I'm getting fired tomorrow."
No, you're getting a new Ferrari. So good luck with
four rooms.
Yeah, four rooms, though. the reason I ask is because the first time for a lot of Tarantino movies, for me, the first time I see it, I don't love it. And sometimes I don't like it at all. Like Kill Bill, I didn't like because I felt like I didn't get it. But Four Rooms, I liked okay. I especially liked the Antonio Banderas with the kids.
Yeah,
that was the one that cracked me up. The other ones I was lukewarm on, and since watching it again a couple times, I like them all except for the Madonna one with the witches and the semen,
which
I really feel like if it was just called Three Rooms, it would be much better received.
The Madonna one with the witches and the semen,
right? You all know what I mean when I say that.
I think most people actually refer to that subplot as electrical tape nipples. That's,
and I think that one sticks out because that was actually a documentary.
That sticks out. It was cold in the room. That's why it sticks
like,
out.
Yeah. Do you think that was... So it was... I mean, it was obviously something kind of creatively risky. Fearless. And by having four directors in one movie, by having those little vignettes, it was something that wasn't really being done at the time. Do you think that was why it failed? Or do you think it was just bad?
It wasn't just bad. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I enjoy anthologies. And part of that is because... You know, even though you don't like the Madonna nipple tape witch's semen room, you get something else after that.
Yeah.
And specifically in Four Rooms, you get the Robert Rodriguez directed one with the kids and Tim Roth as the babysitter, which is hilarious.
And the other one with the finger and the lighter is good.
Yeah, based
too.
On that one. Yep. That was Ray Bradbury. I want to say The Man from the South.
I think
so. I thought it was a, Twilight Zone.
I could still be
or Ray Bradbury.
I'll find out.
Let's not just start getting all that shit confused. So it was Outer Limits or Twilight Zone.
The first time I saw Four Rooms, I was like 16 or 17 years old, and a friend of mine was like,
"Oh my God, I'm a million years old."
Was like, "Oh, you got to see this. You got to see this. You know, whatever." So we like prepared to like make an event out of it because all I knew is, "Oh, Tarantino, awesome, great. I know what I'm in for here." And so we smoked so much weed. Like we smoked lots and lots and lots of weed and got super, super high, unusual for me in high school. and we watched Four Rooms, and I have very, very fond memories of laughing hysterically during that movie. And even if it wasn't, you know, even if it was like the drugs more than the movie itself, I'll always laugh harder now still because I have that like attachment to the movie, this you know, time in the golden years of...
It's me with Austin Powers, the first Austin Powers movie. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Because you smoked a lot of weed? Is that the
No,
thing?
Actually, okay. I wasn't even high. Something about it just fucking killed me when I saw it the first time. I laughed so hard.
No, I saw that with a bunch of friends that were like total James Bond nerds when we saw it. And we were just laughed at it because it was just, to us, the most hilarious movie ever made at the time.
You know, and it's funny you mentioned for it because I have not seen that actually in a really long time.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to watch it again because I was reading about it, and this is something I did not pick up on back when I was a kid and saw it for the first time, was that the whole idea of the Tarantino room, the story that he was telling, was kind of this really distorted version of his own story where he's this big time Hollywood motherfucker now.
Yeah.
And just sort of making fun of himself. And it's just like, yeah, well, this is what I've been doing since I got nominated for an Oscar, is that I'm just partying with stars.
Drinking
all
champagne
the time,
and like yeah, paying the little people to cut off pinkies.
Exactly.
Making ridiculous bets.
Right.
Kind of like in is it Rat Race? Is that the movie where what's the movie where the people are all trying to get to that money at the same time and
Mr. Bean's in Mad World, which was remade as Rat Race.
Remade as Rat Race, yeah. The whole thing like where John Cleese is the executive billionaire having them do crazy, like the maids are hanging from the curtains and one of them drops and they're all like, ah, they're throwing money down.
Betting on it and stuff, yeah.
Kind of like Wolf of Wall Street.
Or Caddyshack.
Yeah.
I bet he eats it. Oh, he does, you know, yeah.
All right, so Tarantino.
Fuck y'all, Caddyshack.
We've got Inglourious Basterds and Pulp Fiction. What's the third movie when you say there's a tie?
Jackie Brown.
Jackie Brown is fucking awesome.
I've never seen it.
It bothers me that we've not
really?
Yet talked about Jackie
never.
Brown.
I've never seen
Jackie
Brown.
I thought it was
Brown.
Okay.
No, it's amazing.
It wasn't what I was expecting for the follow-up to the guy that did Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. Not as fast paced, not as, you know, but watching it again, it's definitely chock full of that trademark humor, and here's another thing is that he's adapting someone else's work, which is I don't think somebody's really done before or since. Well, at least he's never acknowledged it.
Sure.
As a fan, I'm saying yes. I know that he lifts certain concepts, but if people weren't doing that, we'd never have Star Wars. Star Wars is great.
Do you think that?
Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah. Or Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that you needed that it's better for someone to have any kind of exposure to blaxploitation films to appreciate Jackie Brown? Because I'd had none, and I didn't. Again, was watching it was just like I can't tell. It's like Poe's Law. Like, is this bad or is it satire of bad?
You can tell there's something you're missing.
Like, I can't tell if it's just parody of bad or if it really is bad.
It's really good.
See, yeah, I didn't like it that much.
Well, yeah,
you know
I know, but it's not bad. But
okay.
But I mean, the thing is that
your opinion sucks.
Yeah, I guess I'm wrong, so don't answer my question.
Well, no.
We're voting you off the podcast.
Yeah, get
off. Sorry.
I'll leave happily.
Yeah. The thing is that I mean, I've seen maybe one or two blaxploitation films in my life. When I saw Jackie Brown, I don't think that there was any. I didn't feel like there was anything that I was missing when I was watching Jackie Brown. That it didn't feel like that. I needed to have some language that I didn't have.
So right. The writing didn't feel ham-fisted and hacky to you because it was so over the top, because it was being a pastiche of blaxploitation?
Well, I don't know. It was a caper flick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the way I looked at it. And even having gone back and done a little bit of homework, when I come back to it, I don't see it as being blaxploitation flick at all. It just happens to have Pam Grier in it.
You didn't like Black Dynamite either, though.
I liked it after I watched it a couple times because I didn't understand the context. Okay. That's what I'm asking about with this is because I've only seen it once, and the one time I saw it, I didn't really like it. And I'm wondering if maybe that's because I didn't have exposure to the types of movies it was parodying or
at least drawing from movie or type of movie, really. I mean, it's always a pastiche, or it's just all this coming from here and there and everywhere and putting it together into one big soup, you know, this bouillabaisse of, you know, his influences.
Totally
Did you guys know who Pam Grier was before you saw it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Ah, and was that a draw for you that it was Pam Grier?
No.
Because I feel like a lot of the, I felt like when I watched it, a lot of the stuff, I don't know, the jokes, the of the movie was, it's Pam Grier, right? And like I didn't know who she was, so I was like, okay, that's cool, I guess. Like,
well, I thought it was great seeing Pam Grier in it, but really, I walked away from it loving Forrester's part maybe the most, and then finding an appreciation for De Niro's part after subsequent viewings, because he really kind of looks like a guy that just got out of jail, and you watch the way he looks at things all around him, and it's like he's looking at them for the first time in a long time.
I liked it because it was a departure for De Niro from what I'm used to seeing him do. And that was, I liked it for a lot of reasons, but that was one of the, but the De Niro performance I really enjoy.
And I would say Chicks with Guns is maybe worth the price of admission. I was watching it again. I was like, "Jeez, I forgot about this. That's hilarious." Okay, he's got a home video, chicks with guns.
Okay, so
no, just God.
Now I'm gonna say
you guys are boring. You know that? What the hell do you like?
Now I'm gonna say, what's the worst Tarantino film? And by this I mean written and directed.
I have the luxury of having seen My Best Friend's Birthday, so I'll just go ahead and say that.
What the fuck is
I'm
that?
I'm not even aware of its existence.
I don't know what that is.
That was a movie that he had financed with friends and shot with friends that was, and I've heard varying stories, and you know, this is the thing about the internet is that it's the king of misinformation. Hmm. And so the two stories that are out there that I've read are either that the film was finished, but some of the last parts got lost in a fire, or that it just was never finished because everyone ran out of steam. So I watched what footage was available. And it wasn't the worst thing I've seen some dickhole with a camera and some friends do, but it certainly is not as good as anything else he's ever done.
You're talking about fan edits earlier. Do you know The Man Behind the Mask? Have you heard of that name at all? Is it fan edit?
The Alice Cooper song? From Friday the 13th, part 6?
Yeah. Fuck you. So there's this dude that does Grindhouse fan edits.
Okay.
He did The War of the Stars, the Grindhouse remake of New Hope. He takes like unreleased Star Wars footage, Star Wars, A New Hope, and like stuff from like Troops, that Cops, Stormtroopers parody.
Right.
Like all this shit and does a lot of like filtering over it to get that Grindhouse kind of like grossness and dubs over some of the voices and stuff like that. And he turns Star Wars into a New Hope, into a Grindhouse movie. Where like stormtroopers are getting hit and they're fucking like bleeding out of their armor and shit like that.
Really?
Like yeah.
Oh
blood
my
mist.
God!
So he did a Grindhouse edit of Jaws that's called Sharksploitation, where like a third of the footage in the fan edit is like National Geographic shark footage, like Shark Week stuff that he's like spliced in and like filtered over and like dubbed over and all this shit. Like it, you can find them on BitTorrent-y type stuff online, but the guy who makes them is The Man Behind the Mask. And if you can find A War of the Stars, like it's a great place to start, but like the Jaws Grindhouse movie is fucking ridiculous.
All right.
So we could certainly
that sounds
about,
awesome
we could talk about Tarantino for another 20 minutes, but we're gonna move on to five questions.
Okay. Yeah,
so right. It is time for us to ask our guest Pat Bauer, our five questions. So, Molly, why don't you start us out with question number one?
Question number one, Pat Bauer, what is the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days? And it can be at home, in the theater. Doesn't matter if it was new or old.
I'm going to go with Hard Boiled.
Yeah.
The Woo?
Tell us what it is.
Yes.
No.
John Woo?
It's a, no. Yes. Yes.
It's the John Woo.
Yes, actually.
Sorry. I thought you were talking about the P.T. Anderson Hard Boiled. Anyway, go on.
What? Are you talking about Heart 8?
God.
Oh, Heart 8. My bad.
Hard Boiled.
No one's going to hear that on the podcast, but I just...
Hard Boiled.
Hard Boiled, yeah, no, it's a John Woo flick starring Chow Yun-Fat, and basically he's a cop, you know, and he's this kind of dirty, hairy sort of cop, and he comes to be at odds with an undercover cop, and they're both trying to bust the same people. And it's got Lionel Richie and amazing violence and doves, and it's one of the coolest things.
That's where like the whole doves action movie, like gung fu shit, started, man.
Well, I almost said The Killer because I got on the.
Yeah.
I want to go back and watch some of the. Because if you've seen John Woo directing flicks in America, it's like. Not fun. You got to go back and you watch what he did before he came here, and it's amazing.
Between The Killer, I always get The Killer and Hard Boiled confused because it's easy. I mean, there's a lot there.
Fair.
And the same. I watch them one after the other because
there's doves in both.
Yeah. There are. Which is the one where they're throwing babies out of the hospital window to save them?
That's Hard Boiled.
Yeah, Hard Boiled. Right. So there's like a madman's going to blow up the hospital and we need to save these babies in the maternity ward. So they're like just chucking babies out the window to like the other guy, like catching them and shit.
Oh my God.
Because, you know,
oh,
John
China.
Woo. Oh,
yeah.
John
Woo.
It's okay, guys. They're girl babies. It's fine.
Oh,
no worries.
Sorry.
They're garbage.
Okay, Nick,
question
number
two. Who is your favorite atheist character?
Oh my God, that's a great question.
I warned you about this question.
I know you did. You actually prompted me on all these.
I said this is a really hard question, so you should think about it. And you didn't fucking think about it at all, did you?
I forgot the questions.
Fair enough. There were a whole five of them.
Yeah.
An atheist character. You know, I'm gonna go with Harry Dean Stanton's character in Repo Man.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he has my favorite line in movie history. In that movie, where he goes and he looks and he sees the playground, he's like, "Look at that, ordinary fucking people. I hate them."
I thought you were gonna say, "I don't want no communists in my car, no Christians neither."
Also applicable, but even more applicable was that earlier tonight, Harry Dean Stanton put out a Facebook update that was like one of the greatest things I've ever read. And he's like, "I only eat so I can smoke more." And then goes on to talk about how oblivion is definitely something to be feared, but how you got to get past it and to not get involved in any sort of organizations that try to feed you bullshit. I mean, I'm paraphrasing.
Did you just say this
to
with
an
a tweet?
Extreme amount.
Was this 140 characters? He got all that out?
No.
Facebook.
Oh, it's Facebook. All right. Well, that
as many characters
sense.
As you want.
Yeah.
That's where all the stupid people hang is on Facebook. So you got to be able to.
Well, they're
just
not on Google
type,
Plus.
Type,
I mean, no one's
type.
Fucking over there. So.
But no, I'm definitely heavily paraphrasing, but it was like a really interesting thing. I was reading it. It's like, I almost stopped at, I only eat so I can smoke more. And I went, you're my brother. That's so amazing.
So, going to segue into the next question, which is what is your geekiest hobby?
Well, that's another great question. I don't know. I'd love to go with comic books or you know, listening to music, because I don't do that the way normal people do. Normal people listen to music and they enjoy it.
Eeyore.
I might have to go with what I do to my phones.
Do you do to your phones?
Well, you know, I got to root them and do custom ROMs and go in and put, you know... Well, I don't have to do custom SPLs anymore. They kind of did away with that. I started buying Nexus phones, so that's less necessary.
So you just customize the shit out of your phone? Is that
basically,
saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He voids the warranty.
I design it, I look at the screen, and I'm like, oh, how pretty. Like, you know.
When you're designing ROMs, and you burn from an image onto the ROM, I'm assuming?
Yeah, well, it comes in a zip file. They say flashing zips. So you find a ROM that is to your liking.
Do you get to build the ROM by like selecting options and builds and stuff like you can do with Linux distributions?
It depends on how someone puts the ROM out. I tend to not fiddle with that so much, because I tend to pick ROMs where the customization is just a part of the ROM.
Okay,
so I
don't
have to fuck around
custom
with
builds
it too much.
Put out there by people.
Right. The one I like the most is AOKP. Which is Android Open Kang project. Kang being a slang
like
term for stealing someone else's work.
Oh. Not like a traveler who harasses Captain America.
No.
Don't blame me. I voted for
Kang. Oh, you mean Rama Tut? Is Rama Tut Kang? I want answers now, motherfuckers!
You just weirded me out.
Yeah. I weirded everyone out with that one. But it's their whole thing is rainbows and unicorns, and I think it's delightful. And even amongst the dev community, people are like, "What's all rainbows and unicorns? My phone is an expression of my masculinity. Can you get rid of those rainbows and unicorns, bro?" Which
Patrick Bauer, 1 a.m., ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, come back.
And that makes it more appealing to you, the fact that other people out there are like, "You don't like this shit."
Yeah,
like, yeah, your sufferings like nourishes me. Like. Yeah, it's good.
That was awesome. Well, this is back in the day. I bought a Razor. Remember back when those things were popular? And I went there, and there's this open mic guy that worked at T-Mobile, and I didn't know that. I was like, oh, cool. I was actually really delighted to run into him, because I thought he was a funny guy and everything. And I was looking at the phones, and I was like, I kind of want one of the Razors. It just seems to be like, you know, slim. It'll fit in my pocket because I wear really tight jeans. And I bought the one that was pink, that had these like laser engraved flowers on it, because fuck yeah, it looked pretty, and I don't care. And he almost wouldn't sell it to me. He's like, "Why don't you get the black razor?" And I was like, "Because my phone doesn't speak about my dick. I drive a 1990 Toyota. You know what I mean? Like,
you have a black dick."
It's only because there hasn't been any blood going into it for like a long time.
Oh, there it is.
Question four.
Oh, thank God.
What is your favorite sandwich? And please be
Reuben.
Specific. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
the king of sandwiches.
Hot Reuben.
Nice.
Hot Reuben?
Hot Reuben.
I didn't have to think about that one. Yeah hot nice. Reuben. Grilled right. Reuben.
With Thousand Island, without?
I enjoy Thousand Island. Okay. And I also enjoy sriracha on it.
Oh. Have you had one at Honey or the place above Honey?
Ginger Hop.
Ginger Hop.
They make one with kimchi instead of cabbage and sriracha instead of Thousand Island. Pretty good.
There's a Reuben here at this restaurant. I think.
Hey, there you
hotel,
go.
So.
You can leave this podcast and go have a Reuben.
So, yeah. Question number five: what's the stupidest thing anyone's ever said to you about your atheism
or agnosticism?
Or agnosticism.
Or your dick.
Because just like God, it doesn't exist.
Again, you know, that's a real tough one because I think anything outside of like, oh, you know, that's cool, is incredibly stupid. You know, it's just like, I don't want to be punished for being right.
Nice, yeah.
And I think anything that falls outside of that is pretty fucking stupid.
Do you get pushback from people ever? I mean, have you ever, like, told someone that you were kind of a non-believer and gotten pushback?
I don't, you know what, I don't get it in my day-to-day life. Where I get it is when I perform, because I talk about it in my act. And I don't put it out there so much, like, this is what I am, because I don't like titles so much. And I've actually been really hesitant to say that I'm a geek or to join in geeky stuff, because I feel like it's just like, I'm just Patrick, and this is the kind of stuff I like. I've just kind of come to discover the older I get that it just happens to be stuff that the geeks like. if that makes sense.
The geeks.
Like. No, well, no, it's... Gosh, now I feel like the man. Thanks,
yeah, you are.
Tim. But it's usually what people say to me after shows, and they say stuff like, you know, like, I don't like that you made fun of people that use the Bible as a reason to do or not do stuff. And I think that's very stupid, because the reason I don't maim people or murder people is because I feel in my heart that it's wrong, and not because I read somewhere that maybe I shouldn't do that. Yeah. You know what I mean? I kicked a guy in the nuts when I was in third grade, and I watched him cry, and I went to myself, and I went, that's wrong. I shouldn't kick people in the nuts. That I feel really bad now.
And I need to point out, there's nothing in the Bible that says you can't do that.
Which is exactly why you have to watch out for people that believe in the Bible.
Yeah.
Because they will kick you in the motherfucking nuts.
Yeah. And because it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. The Bible says nothing against it.
That's actually where the term Bible thumper comes from.
And with that, we've reached the end of our podcast, ladies and gentlemen. We would like to thank Patrick Bauer for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Nick's balls are named Deuteronomy and Exodus.
We have been Geeks Without God. Thank you so much for listening to us. We will be back next week. Catch you later.
Bye.
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 I've always wished to be the tyranny of evil men, because if I was, I would be so much cooler than I actually am.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Thanks, P-Bow, for making that fun.